skills. The class can be taken for credit or under the Center for Lifelong Learning. For more information, contact Susan McGraw, WHFR's General Manager at 313-845-9842.
You're hearing new music from Charlie Peacock. Each week on Light from the Underground, I spotlight songwriters. I'm your host, Bill Keith, and I enjoy digging through all the new releases we've received to find the best new music for you. Some of the artists you'll hear include lesser-known artists like Flying Colors, The Choir, and The Civil Wars. We'll also mix in classic artists making new and creative music, but it doesn't stop there. You'll also hear new sounds from artists making a go of it right here in Michigan. Check out Light from the Underground on the second and fourth Saturdays at 10 a.m. on 89.3 WHFR.FM. We're making waves.
Mercy, Lord, if you will.
Henry Ford Community College provides a strong foundation for students pursuing a career in education, offering a two-year associate's degree in pre-education as well as pre-secondary and special education. HFCC was one of only six community college programs studied by Recruiting New Teacher, Inc. and has been the model for other colleges around the nation. For more information about HFCC's pre-education degrees, please call 313-845-6430 or check out the pre-education program guide at hfcc.edu/programs.
Dig deeper. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area on the new WHFR Journal every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. and anytime as a podcast from WHFR.fm. Join our WHFR news team as we dig deeper, making waves.
You are listening to the Heights News and Views, presented on the second Tuesday of every month on WHFR Dearborn, making waves on 89.3 FM. A program devoted entirely on the issues of interest to the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, Michigan. This program is part of the WHFR's weekly talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 until 2 p.m. Making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting on 89.3 FM from Dearborn, Michigan. And now, to your hosts, WHFR News Director Dennis Reimars and Dearborn Heights Councilman Ned Apigian.
That's right. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views, the forum show here on WHFR. That's the second Tuesday of every month. I'm Dennis Reimars, along with my co-host, Councilman from Dearborn Heights, Ned Apigian. How are you, Ned?
Fine.
You're fine. Good.
The election is over.
Well, you look well. Speaking of which, and I know that we have a very special in-studio guest. As people know, this is a pre-recorded show, but the way we did it this time, based on schedules, we are actually recording this just less than 2 hours before it's hitting the air, and we have a special in-studio guest, but I wanted to touch on one thing. You have a new, official new council member with you. Do you want to talk about that at all? Mr. Joseph Kaczynski?
I wouldn't think about him as new. He's a fixture.
That's true. He did this for a long time, years ago. He came back for this very, very short term for the spot that was vacated by Marge Van Houten's appointment to the circuit court.
And her glorious election to the court.
That's true. And then he did have that short period of time where I guess you could call him an incumbent, and then he faced off against Lisa Ferens for the seat, which will run for another year.
We appointed him.
You appointed him. So anyway, congratulations, Joe Kaczynski. He has been on the show with us, and we talked at length about his qualifications, and congratulations. Background. Yes. In studio, though, I'm really excited about this because this is a young lady who I've met on a few occasions and who I just really, really think is a cool person, the Wayne County Commissioner, Diane Webb. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's so good to have you here. Congratulations. You just did win the election a week ago.
Thank you so much. Appreciated that.
And I want to go into some things, and maybe we'll start a little bit. We'll go back a few steps to talk about your background and such. But
But first, the people listening ought to know what she represents.
That's a good
Not
idea.
Not Franklin, Michigan, but tell us.
I represent the city of Dearborn Heights in its entirety, Redford Township, and I just picked up Southeast Livonia in the new term with the redistricting.
Okay, and I was going to ask you, what does it mean you just picked up? They did redistrict in many of the areas, mm-hmm. Dearborn Heights included, and cost-saving decisions, would you say?
Well, I think, you know, they have to do it according to the census.
Population.
Yeah, every 10 years they're going to do a redistricting according to the census. And in the last census, we lost about 39% of the population on the east side of Detroit. So Detroit lost a seat. Out County picked up a seat. It shifted everybody north and west for the most part. And in my particular district, and in the size of our districts also declined. The average commission district used to be about 130 to 135,000 constituents. It's down to about 115 to 120,000 constituents.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. I thought the commission district would be like a state rep. I mean, a congressional district, which is about 600,000, if memory serves me.
Oh, yeah. It's not.
So it's then if it's not based on population, how do they decide?
No, it is based on population, but it's just there's 15.
There's 15, and the 15 has to be divided.
Exactly. Okay. That's right.
What I meant earlier, obviously the decision to redistricting comes up every 10 years, but I remember talking to the city clerk in Dearborn Heights, Walter Prashevitz, and he said that it gives him an opportunity during the redistricting to make some moves that do save, because it's sometimes consolidating districts.
That has to do with voting precincts.
Sure.
There's no savings in changing.
Oh, in the redistricting? No, no.
As long as you got 15 people, you're paying 15 people.
All right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So they divide the county into the 15 districts, and the changes that were made to my district, and it wasn't dramatic for me. I mean, I did lose the city of Garden City, which was my hometown, so that part of it was dramatic for me. I was sorry to lose it, but as far as numbers go, I was able to maintain 106,000 of my existing constituents in the city of Dearborn Heights and Redford Township, which is very meaningful to me because I've been working with them for 4 years. I have relationships. I understand the nuances of each community, and we're in progress in getting things done. So I was very pleased to be able to keep 92% of my existing district. I just lost the city of Garden City, and I picked up 5 precincts in Southeast Livonia.
And I know that a lot of the people, of course, I work in my studio for my day job is right in the Berwyn Center, and the people, they all know you. You're at these events. So I would imagine maintaining the same constituents to that degree probably is very gratifying.
Oh, it really is. Yeah, I've got a lot of very close relationships with my constituents, and it saddens me to even lose the ones that I've lost. So, yeah.
Those people know you. We were at the, less than a week ago, we were at the Halloween party at the Berwyn Center. That was quite interesting. Ned, I have to share this with you. I didn't see you there.
It was fun.
I forgot.
Missed out.
It was really
at the
fun.
Eaton Center.
There was two of them.
It was at Eaton, Upper, when you're right.
Oh, that's right. It was Eaton.
At Eaton, and they had this, the performer. Boy, I'm way off today, guys. Sorry. They had this, the performer there, his name is Michael. Michael begins with a C, something Italian. Okay, I'll leave it at that. I really should give him more credit because he was amazing, wasn't he?
He really was, and I think the seniors really enjoyed him singing all those old classic songs.
Oh, my God, he got right in there, Ned, and he was singing Neil Diamond right down, like on one knee in front of this lady. I thought she was blushing. She was really blushing.
I think they were liking him, yes.
I think it was really fun. Okay, let's...
We got to correct something for Diane, because when she said her hometown, Garden City, now she's in Dearborn Heights. So mm-hmm. previously she lived in Garden City, and now she's in Dearborn Heights. So,
but obviously you know the area.
She's in the right district.
Yes.
You know the area. You grew up in Garden City. Went to college, and then you talked about your first job back in the 80s in a telecommunications job.
Right.
Which we talked a little bit off the air. I was working for, I considered it a competitor, but I'm sure your company didn't. Not at that point. We were a fledgling, and of course Sprint, where I worked, is a much different company now and changed their focus from long distance to primarily cellular and technology oriented. What did you, what in the private sector helped you turn into what seems like a very successful political career? What were some of the attributes that you learned?
Well, you know, I think that all of the different jobs that I had at Michigan Bell, then Ameritech, then SBC, and I left prior to it going back to AT&T, have helped shape me and give me the experiences that I needed to do this job. For one thing, I was the first woman in the history of my 100-year-old union local to become a top skilled tradesperson. That gave me the thick skin that you need to get into politics, for certain. And I spent 11 years going in and out of houses fixing phones for every different demographic you can imagine, socioeconomic, racial, ethnic, background, people of all ages. So I got to spend a lot of time in the living rooms of...
So you know how to fix phones.
I do. And but I don't do too much of that anymore. And the technology's advanced so much since then. But I did get the opportunity to meet and see how so many people live. And it's amazing how that comes back to me now. And I met with seniors that chose between their lunch and their medicine. You know, I seen kids living in projects that didn't have coats. I mean, I worked in the wealthiest of the wealthiest neighborhoods and the poorest of the poorest. So I think that it gave me a real good look at the world that I take into my public service. Yeah, so definitely.
And then as part of your master's degree focused in, I think it was at Wayne State, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Public relations.
Right.
And so, I mean, I guess what I'm looking at, we have a seminar here each year. In fact, we promoted it less than a month ago,
mm-hmm.
Regarding, it's called Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Careers for Women.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading a little bit about your bio, and you went the technical route and very much the, I forget how they work it. There's three different parts of telecom, the infrastructure, the actual customer service, and then the technician.
Mm-hmm.
And you went that route, which is very, especially back then, probably was not considered very conventional for women, was it?
There was 3,500 men and 27 women in the field when I was out in the field, and it was, I wrote my undergraduate thesis at Eastern Michigan on problems and issues that women deal with in non-traditional jobs, and it was published, and I won the Undergraduate Symposium Award for it, and it's available in the Eastern Michigan University Library.
That is so awesome.
How do you get an untraditional job?
A non-traditional?
Well, in that particular field, you have to make it through the what I would refer to as boot camp. I mean, they strap those hooks on your legs, and you have to be able to climb telephone poles with 50 pounds of body belts and tools around your waist. And so a lot of women have had a difficult time making it through that. I was a very athletic kid. I had older brothers. I ran track. I speed skated. I mean, I was in pretty good shape. And, of course, I was, you know, 20 yep. years old.
Yeah, we're all in good shape back then.
Right, exactly.
No, and then you go on and you get your master's in public relations, which, I'm sorry, I see a tremendous, how it complements. Seriously, I did. Obviously, you did, too. What was your thinking going into that?
Well, you know, I tell you, anyone I went to high school with was not at all surprised, including my counselors and instructors, that I ended up with a master's in public relations because, you know, I think that you're most successful when you can be who you are. And I think my brother put it really well when he said, boy, Diane, you're so lucky that you get paid for being you. And, you know, it's really true. I have a love for people, and I love to be able to improve situations.
Right.
I love to problem solve. So I think that the combination of even as a technician, I was a troubleshooter. I was always on the repair side of the house.
Right.
So after I went as far as I could in the union and I went into management, I was a service manager to major corporations. Then I was a project manager and I built networks for AT&T, which was our competitor. And then I went into government. I was a government and community relations director, and that's what led to my career in government.
So what, everything that you did, the hands-on work, that was obvious, but you also were learning communication skills along the way. I mean, and that's...
Oh, yeah.
I saw the Dale Carnegie.
Yeah.
No, that's huge. I mean, that, and I remember that being just like, I don't know to the degree it's huge now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sure it's very still an effective program, but back then it was like amazing.
It really was. And I that was a great opportunity. Anybody that has an opportunity to do a Dale Carnegie class, I would suggest that they do it, or if they still offer them, or a like class. I also got to teach public speaking at Eastern Michigan University.
Oh, that's cool.
So I think that no matter what kids go to school for, public speaking is key. Regardless of what your major is, to be able to talk to people, especially in this world where everything is virtual and digital and we have virtual social lives, these kids, I think that it really would benefit them to take a public speaking course and a management, even broadcasting, and anything that gets them out on their feet talking to
kind
people.
Of out of their comfort zone a little bit, because I think a lot of people are a little bit nervous, you know.
Oh.
I know when I first started here, I mean, the microphone and everything was so intimidating. I have to ask you, have you ever been a waitress at a restaurant?
No,
because that was the one thing. I did that for a while. In fact, I supported my family for quite a while at a decent fine dining restaurant. But I always felt like that's something that everybody should do, that in public speaking, to be able to, you know, get your feet wet. And I'll tell you what, nothing will get you out of your comfort zone quicker than serving somebody else their food.
Right.
Let me tell you.
I would imagine so.
We are going to take a non-commercial break. We're here. Ned and I are here with Dearman Heights News and Views with Wayne County Commissioner Diane Webb. We're going to be right back after this non-commercial break. Please stay tuned.
Green jobs are here to stay. Why not go green with a degree in alternative energy here at Henry Ford Community College? Students will acquire knowledge in advanced fuel sources and the practice of alternative energy in the world. For more information on the alternative energy program, please contact HFCC's Technology Division by calling 313-317-9816 or by going to hfcc.edu/programs.
We're back, and this is Dearborn Heights News and Views with Ned and Dennis, and we are here with Wayne County Commissioner Diane Webb. Again, Diane, thank you. I know your schedule's crazy. Maybe not quite as crazy as it was maybe 2 weeks ago, but I think still you have a lot going on and a lot of things. Let's face it, we all have things
that... pressure's off.
Well, there's things out there that need solutions. The pressure's not... I would say the pressure's on even more now. Would you agree with that? Now that you've won... You have to kind of like, I don't know, justify it.
Yeah, well, you know, people have their expectations, and they are certainly warranted. And
well, we're going to get what we got before, so that's not a surprise.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a ringing endorsement. He does not compliment very often, so that was a huge thing. Anyway.
Thank you.
Better than me, I'm sure I couldn't do that.
I'm sure you could.
You have, you know what? I may have been, Ned, talking to your microphone. We're on the air now. This is okay.
Yeah.
This is what we do.
Go ahead.
Did we get lost there for a minute?
No, Dennis did.
Oh, you did. Kicked my switch.
Well, you know, I hit it on the important people. Anyway, we talked a little bit off the air, and you caught my attention with something. Because I'm looking at your bio, and I see this perfect trajectory. I see everything you did as one stepping stone going to the next, and it seemed very logical to me. But when I asked you, I said, well, did you plan that? You said, no. You said, well, you knew that you were learning. It looks to me, and this is a term I use a lot, is you were following your opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And things tend to go well when you're going with the current, I guess, is another, I think that's Taoism or something, but I don't want to get all philosophical, but what was the thinking behind some of the decisions?
Well, I think that people naturally gravitate towards careers that they feel have skill sets that they're good at, you know? And you enjoy doing things that you're good at, right?
Right, and you're good at things you enjoy.
Right.
And that's kind of the theory.
Exactly.
Right.
And I love solving problems. So whether I was solving phone line problems for residential customers or, you know, handling major failures for major customers like the Chrysler account, I mean, as I worked my way up in the phone company, and I was promoted 4 times in 4 years. I was a service manager locally, and then I was and the only thing that kept changing as I climbed up the rank was the size of the customer.
Right.
And by the time I left, I was a director of government and community relations under the president of SBC Michigan, and I handled all the major failures in Wayne and Oakland County.
That would incorporate a lot of PR, would it not?
Oh, yeah, disaster. Well, the disaster side. I mean, for the most part, we did problem analyzation. We looked at what was the cause of the problem. And is there a trend? We looked at trend analysis. Is it an equipment problem? Is it a user problem? And then we would resolve it. Then I'd sit down with the vice president of communications for Chrysler and tell him that these are the things we were going to do to make sure it never happened again. And so the post-mortem, and I'm huge on that corporate process, that troubleshooting process that says, analyze, look at the way things are today, and are they working or are they not working? If they're not working, why?
And yet you still, when you were working with the major networks on this basically in your role as a public relations person, that has to help you as far as the communication aspects too, as far as being a little bit more media savvy as you went along.
And I'll tell you about that. I am really a task-oriented type person. I don't know if you've ever taken a Myers-Briggs test, but I suggest everybody do that. And I am, and everything about those results came out that I should be in government or the military or police work because I have a protective nature and I have a problem-solving nature.
Myers-Briggs, how do we get to take one?
You could take one. They probably offer it here right at the college campus. Oh. I took one at Eastern Michigan in their career center. And I laughed at it because it was so funny how it really tells you who you are. You answer all these questions, you don't even realize what they're getting to. And at the end, when it spits out what your personality is like, I'm very task-oriented. And I care very much about the people, but I have to solve the problems to make it work for the people, you know?
Sure.
It's all about solving problems. And so I think that that's what helped me excel in my professional career. I never cared for the showy part of it. I never cared for working with the media. This is why when I went into public relations, I went into management to put out fires. And sure, I can communicate the facts and tell you what happened and what we're going to do to fix it. And I can tell you what my vision is and the way things I think should be. But to be, I give a lot of credit to those that like both of you, they can be on the radio and be in front of the cameras. And I've done TV interviews with people who are so natural in front of the cameras. Personally, I don't care for all of that.
Really?
I really don't.
You seem really at home. Like when we go to the council meetings and you'll get up and speak to the council, you just seem so comfortable.
I speak to the facts and I speak to the problems and I speak to the people and so I'm doing my job. But as far as I took a dramatics class one time in high school thinking that it would be an easy class, and I absolutely hated it. So, I'm really not very comfortable in front of a camera. I just don't pay attention to it. I'm there to do my job.
Well, I do know that at the time, you know, now that you, when you get in front of city council every second and fourth Tuesday or whatever in Dearborn Heights, you know these people really well at this point. I mean, these are friends, colleagues, I mean, people that you've worked with and got things accomplished as a team. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you consider them part of your team?
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, they help me be eyes and ears to the people.
Yeah.
I mean, the city council people are, I have three communities, and I can't be everywhere all the time. So the city council people get phone calls from their constituents, and they call me, or they see things that are county related that they need that needs attention, whether it's a fence down at Hines Park or the grass too high or whatever it may be. And so yeah, they definitely help me be my eyes and ears in my community and then I go to work for them at the county and get those things resolved and I come back to report. And I just so I don't want to set up a false expectation. I don't go to every single.
Well, she has representatives that attend.
I have a representative attend every single meeting.
Sure.
Just to be on the lookout for me because I can't be everywhere all the time. But especially with Redford Township and Dearborn Heights do their city council meetings on the same Tuesdays of the month.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I try to go back and forth. And if there's anything that's specific.
Is that where you send Tanya? I never see her at our meetings.
No, Tanya is my runs my office. She runs my office, and then she's my full-timer, and then I have a couple part-timers that work in the district, and Mr. Bill McSween is a former director of Parks and Rec in Redford. He's my district rep in Redford.
Okay. That's why I don't know him.
Yeah.
Okay, and so I'm looking at, again, your the point where you were moved up as pretty much as high as you could with AT&T, it sounded like. And when you're doing it in the private sector, what was there some kind of a catalyst? Because it was right, you quit working at a private sector, and then a month or two later, I imagine you'd won the election, and then you began your job on the city council in Garden City.
Right. Well, I became a director of government and community relations. So talk about the perfect preparation for a government job is because I had one foot in the company and the other one in the government.
Okay.
So your council job is a part-time job, as most people don't know, maybe.
It was. It was a part-time job.
So you were still working for the telephone company?
When I started, but then I left because I had a job as the Director of Government and Community Relations. Part of that job was I was a lobbyist. So I had to fly back and forth to Washington and Lansing. And when I got divorced, my son was only 3, and I didn't want to travel all over the place. It was just too hard.
Right.
On a little one. So I decided to take an early out, and I took an early retirement. I stayed home with my son. I sat on the city council for 4 years. I taught out at Eastern Michigan University. I did some consulting. I substitute taught K through 12. I worked with autistic kids. I just dabbled in everything I ever
How
wanted
fun.
To do.
Fun, yeah. After 18 years with
the phone company
and moving steadily up, this was kind of it had to be a little bit more relaxing, a little less stress.
Oh, it really was. I mean, when I left the phone company, my boss's boss was the president of the company, and I did have a very successful career there, and I enjoyed the work that I did. I loved working in the community. I handled foundation grants. I got to work with all the charitable organizations, learn about all the nonprofits, learn about all the needs of the organizations that I work with today. Vista Maria, for example, in Dearborn Heights. I worked with Vista Maria on several different fronts. You know, I used to fund them through the SBC Foundation, and now I fund them through the county. So, but I got to learn a lot of different things, organizations, governments, people, needs in the community. I learned all that on that community and government relations job. But then when it just got to the point where I was traveling so much, it just didn't make sense in my personal life, and I think we all have to take our family first. So I was able to take 5 years off, stay home with my son. When he went back to school full-time, I did my 4 years on the city council. I finished my four-year term in Garden City, and I ran for the county commission seat. But
What were some of the challenges, some of the things that you remember most about city council? Because, I mean, I think you and I have actually talked about this briefly, where that local level is where stuff gets done. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't on a bigger scale, but it just seems like there's a lot more people involved. There's a lot more. It's a bigger process. But things can be decided in one night at a city council meeting. And we saw that with the smart meters. I don't know if you remember that with
RGT
smart meters. Well, enough people came out. And I laugh about it because I remember I was there from the very beginning when this couple, a man and a woman from Chesterfield or Macomb,
Shelby Township,
we came to these meetings, and at first people looked at him like, oh, come on, you know, because I'm sure a lot of people come out with issues that aren't necessarily as significant as others. I think that was a diplomatic way of putting that. Sometimes there are priorities. Well, these people are very passionate about something that turned out to be very important in the minds of the people as well. Overnight, it got changed. Now, on a bigger scale, obviously, the state has something to do with the governing of those smart meters or whatever, but we heard the people talking. That had to be, did that make any difference with you at all?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I loved the less bureaucracy involved in local government. I mean, even going from a major Fortune 100 company like SBC Ameritech, I mean, I was able to change a lot of policies there, but it was like turning a ship on a dime, you know.
Right.
It's a long, slow process. But I was able to change a lot of processes and procedures while I was there. I rewrote methods and procedures while I was there on the technical side. And, again, problem solving, changing the way we do things. But in local government, yeah, it's very much hands-on. And you're very close to the people, and I enjoyed it a lot. I never had any aspirations, to be honest with you, to go into politics or government. My career path was, I wanted to be the president of SBC Michigan. That's what I wanted to do.
Not a bad idea.
But you know what?
Pays well, too.
Pays a lot better, really. But you know what? It's not nearly as rewarding. You know, it's just you're making a multi-million dollar company, more millions, and that's great because it creates jobs, and that's all good. But the thing is that in government, you're able to make difference in people's lives. I mean, if you really care about what you do, and that is just rewarding beyond dollars. And so the reason I made the change from corporate into government is because that 5 years I spent in government relations, I was, discouraged by the lack of representation. You know, I met the people. I saw their needs. Remember I told you I was in the field for 11 years. Yeah. I went in 5 houses a day. I saw the needs. And when I went to Lansing and I went to Washington, it just felt like they were so far removed from the people that they represented. And I found it very disheartening. And the process was so bureaucratic at the higher levels of government, like you said, it was like impossible to get anything done. And so needs went so long unmet. And I guess I've just always been one of those people that I want to fix it, right? That's right. My nature. And so so that's why I ran for local government. I was asked to run by my state representative and my state senator at the time that I worked with in Lansing. They said that my city was really struggling and that they would really appreciate it if I would run for city council, and that's what motivated me to run.
Okay. And we're going to take a break in a second, and when we do come back, I'd like to find out what maybe the catalyst was for county commissioner, because that is there's a lot of similarities that I hadn't realized. I mean, city council does a lot of different things, but mm-hmm. among those are ordinance and budgets.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you that's something that you obviously got very good at, and we want to talk about the county proposals that came up, two of which that you authored, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a short non-commercial break.
Ones that failed.
Yep. There were 2 out of 5 that did pass, yes?
Yeah, and okay. One of mine passed.
Excellent. Again, this is Ned and Dennis. Slow down. Dearborn Heights News and Views. We're here with Diane Webb, the Wayne County Commissioner. We're going to be right back after the short non-commercial.
District what number so we can learn that number?
8.
District 8. Thank you.
I wanted to say it, but I thought I could have been wrong. It used to be 9.
It was 9. Yeah. It's now 8.
All right. We're going to be right back. Thank you.
Are you thinking about getting your GED diploma? Well, here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a number of pep talks that can motivate you.
Sometimes things don't always turn out the way you want them to.
You know that feeling? People look at you and don't believe in you.
You want some gentle encouragement.
Then you're on your way to your GED diploma and a better life.
But I know they're probably just a little bit nervous. You can find it in yourself to take that first step.
You can improve your future.
You can do this. I know you can.
You need to start pushing yourself.
Now get your game face on and take the first step towards a better life.
Hurry up. Don't make me repeat myself.
Whatever level of motivation you need to get your GED diploma, we've got a pep talk that's right for you. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org for your pep talk and find free GED classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
We are back. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views. I'm Dennis Reimers with Ned Apigian.
Here we are.
Dearborn Heights City Councilman, Ned Apigian, and we are here with Wayne County Commissioner Diane Webb. Again, thank you for spending some time with us today. You're city council. You're working part-time. A lot going on in Garden City, a lot. And I know based on the economy, they took a hit harder than a lot of communities, you know. And then certain things didn't pass that I thought should have, or not that I personally did. I thought they would. Certain millages, just a lot going on there. What was the catalyst to go from that particular job, which seems like it was challenging in itself, to something that could be perceived as a bigger job?
The transition from the city to the county, you mean?
Yes.
Well, it was
an opening. Somebody, there was availability.
That helps. You know, it's part of it. I think a lot of things is, you know, I heard someone describe luck as having an opportunity come along when you're prepared for it and you're ready for it. And I think that that's just how it happened for me. Every step up the food chain in the phone company were things I wanted to do that became available, and I just kind of fell into them. Same thing with the city council thing. That wasn't really my idea. That was brought to me, as I told you offline, from my state senator and my state representative at the time. My city had just gotten sued for $15 million, I don't know if you remember, from a landscaper.
Ouch. Wow. No, I did not know that.
For a city that has a $21 million budget, that was a tremendous hit. And so,
and they paid it?
And Well, what happened is it was bonded, and the taxpayers have been paying it for 15 years. And I was so irate over how that whole thing happened, the whole mismanagement. And the fault was not one person's, but of several people's fault.
Sure.
It was just grossly mismanaged. There was a lack of process. There was lack of single point of contact. There were so many people giving this contractor different direction. And so he was able to make a serious case of it. And it cost the taxpayers, you know, dearly. And in a city that was already going through a very tough time because of the economy.
So what would that have to do with the county?
Well, Nothing.
Why you would run for your council? Would make sense if you saw that.
But. Well, the reason that I did the 4 years on the city council, and I was able to resolve a lot of issues. We were able to do a lot of good things to help the community, and I enjoyed it so much, and that is why I decided to run for the county. Now, I worked with the county as a director of government relations, if you remember me telling you. I don't know
right,
if I, we did this
up. Job.
Yeah, I had 24 county commissioners in Wayne and Oakland County commissions that I worked with, so I was pretty familiar with the type of work they did, and they were just the natural progression that was the next level up. As Ned said earlier, the former county commissioner gave the seat up to run for higher office, so it was an open seat.
Sure.
But and it came open just as my term. I had a 4-year term.
Expired.
It was perfect timing. Yeah, it was perfect timing. So, but, you know, I think that what really motivated me to if I told you during that 5 years that I was off between when I left the phone company, I worked a lot of different jobs because I started out an education major. I substitute taught. I taught it out at the college level. I dabbled in a lot of different things I wanted to do. I was on the city council for 4 years, so I did the legislative thing. And I thought, okay, you know, really, where do I want to be? Where can
at the same time you were this 5 years, you were on the council?
I was 4 years of the 5 years.
During that 5-year period?
Yes, I was okay. On the city council. But it was really about 4.5 years, and 4 of the 4.5 I was on the city council. So we were able to take, what I was able to do at the city council is to take the same thing I went through at the phone company. While I worked for the phone company, it went from 32,000 to 13,000 employees in a decade. So talk about doing more with less.
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about going from being a monopoly, the only game in town, to being in a highly competitive industry. Not only all of the different service landline providers, but then cell phones. Technology came out. And so we were bleeding line loss, like a million lines in a year in Ameritech. In 1 year when cell phones came out, we lost a million landlines. So as a manager there, we had to continually hone our process. We had to continually look at how we do business and reinvent it to do more efficiently and more effectively so that we could compete. So going through that process and then going into local government at a time when all the revenues are on the downslide and all the costs of health care, costs of fuel, is going up. So we had the same gap, we had the same deficit, and we had to learn how to do things more efficiently and effectively. So, I mean, we had a great relationship with our city manager. We have a city manager, and we have a part-time mayor and council and a full-time city manager in the city of Garden City. That's their form of government. We worked very closely. He would be like the executive. I'll make a comparison. Like the Wayne County executive is more like our city manager. He really handled day-to-day operations.
He's paid a serious wage.
Paid off like $100,000 a year. Our mayor was ceremonial for the most part and a tiebreaker.
Right.
He wasn't the strong form of government
mayor.
You have in Dearborn Heights.
Right.
Yeah, you have a strong mayor.
Were the commissioners paid as well?
The city council people made like $3,000 a year.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just a stipend, but we were able to resolve a lot of problems in the city. I was able to revamp their hotel communications network and save them $750,000 over 5 years.
Nice.
So I took that to Wayne County and saved taxpayers $15.5 million a year.
And that's really what happened. The translation was on a much bigger scale.
Right.
But what you were doing on a daily basis was still that interaction with people, the communication aspect.
The ordinances.
And the fixing things.
The fixing things.
Yeah, it always comes back to that with you, doesn't it?
It does. It comes back to fixing things. And, you know, it's really, I find, a great preparation for the situation we're in at Wayne County. We got a lot of things to fix.
Yeah, you think?
I do.
That's what government's all about, fixing things.
So yes. Unfortunately, there's some governments that insist on breaking them first.
Amen.
Maybe only to be able to fix them. But so there wasn't any one thing. I mean, you were looking at all these things. At that point, did you say, okay, I want to do this. I like this politics stuff. I'm good at it.
Yeah.
And I want to do this, and I want to see how far I can take it.
Yeah, it was a public service part of it, you know, the writing the ordinances, changing policies. Like I told you, when I was at the company, I rewrote methods and procedures. At the city level, I wrote policy. I wrote legislation to change the way we do things to make it more efficient, more effective, drive down internal operating costs, and preserve services for the residents. And I said, you know what, I can do this at a larger scale. And be able to help more people. The politics part of it's the part I hate. It gets back to that whole showy part in front of the camera.
Absolutely.
That part is the noise that I have to deal with. to deliver services to the residents.
And what we talked about earlier is it's unfortunate with a 2-year term. It seems like, and I think you'll even agree, your first year or however long as a county commissioner, there had to be a learning curve of some kind. I mean, there always is for something we're doing new.
Tremendous.
Yeah. And then, so here you are, you're learning. And I want to ask you about that because I think I had mentioned off the air that we interviewed George Durrani and other politicians here, I almost call them a
candidate.
Service provider, but people that are a service to their communities. And the reality is that these jobs do take time to learn. And then with a 2-year term, it seems like as soon as you start to get a hang of things, you're out there campaigning again if you want to keep your job.
You aren't kidding.
Is it the treadmill that it sounds like?
It is, exactly. It is, and it's unfortunate.
It is. And then we've just left out one of the key components, which is raising money to be able to do all of these things.
Absolutely.
But back to the learning curve. Were there people, because George Durrani, who of course is a state representative representing Dearborn, he said that people, when he got to Lansing, sat him down and told him, this is how we do business here. And no, there wasn't any coercion. There wasn't any, nobody threatened or anything like that. But there are certain arrangements that are made where if one individual will help another individual and they can expect a help in the future.
Well, at the state level, they have, I forgot the word now, it escapes me, that they go through, it's the same thing in the Congress. You go there for a week. And they explain how everything
like an orientation?
Works.
Yeah, an orientation.
That's the word I was looking for.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is there anything unlike the city council, there is no or nobody. Are you, all of a sudden, somebody's talking about something you never heard of.
Right,
before.
Right. How about for county commissioner? Was there any kind of process like that?
I don't think they have orientation.
They
official.
Have a one-day orientation where they bring you in and you meet with the HR department and they say, just like when you get a job anywhere. I mean, these are our... you know, hiring practices
benefits.
And our benefits and our...
this is where you park.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Logistics,
sure.
You know, and then... but then they line you up to meet with the different departments within you meet with the legislative analysts that work with us to do the research on our policy. You meet with the auditor general that handles the audits for us. He works for the commission.
That's
him
cool.
And his team. And so you meet with the different... the different departments that work within the county commission. Okay, then you spend the next year meeting all of Wayne County. And I went after it diligently. I went down to the offices and met every department director, every countywide elected. People know very little about, I think, county government at large. Unless they've worked for the county or with the county in some capacity, I know even as a former director of government and community relations, I think people understand a lot more about their mayor and city council, their state legislature and governor, and their president and congressional members and those processes than they do Wayne County government or county government.
I have to agree. I have to agree 100%. That's why I was like, that wouldn't be, in my mind, one of the glamorous jobs. What the job that you have is as vital as it is, and believe me, I've come to really appreciate what you do. It doesn't seem like it's one of the sexy ones. You're not on TV every week like city council or every other week or whatever, however the it plays out. And you, who don't necessarily like the media attention.
Commission meetings are not televised on
no.
government channel?
No, they're not. They're open to the public, but they're not televised.
Right. And that...
there's pros and cons. I mean, I'm a big advocate for transparency.
I know.
And we'll talk more about that when we talk about some of the reforms that we were talking about offline.
Yeah, we're going to make sure we got enough time for that.
Yeah, so I am a big advocate of transparency, but you don't get a lot of the political baloney when you're not televised.
That's true.
And so,
the showboating and everything.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad of that.
Okay.
Yeah, because...
what's political baloney? What do you mean by that?
You know, when people will create controversy to appear as... right. It really, and most of the time it's the mess that they created in the first place. And I've seen this at every level of government.
People just show about, they know there's a camera there and they know their constituents might be watching.
And if they're running for office, they can put in plugs and whatever. And
that
not,
doesn't happen.
And not with a lot of them don't do this.
No.
And a lot of them don't, but there are always some that do.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate. And there's nothing to gain when it's not televised. So you don't get so much of that.
I agree. Now, you have brought about some reform during your 4 years. Can we talk about that? Because I definitely want to have
your accomplishments in the last.
Absolutely, because I want to make sure we have enough time to talk about these amendments, the proposals, right?
We got to tell the world what she's done in the last
We got to talk about the county proposals as well and how you see the future. So let's talk about some of the reform that you've brought about.
Okay. You know, like you said earlier, and I think George was right on point, State Representative Duraney, when he told you that, you know, the first year or so is a huge learning curve. You are. You're spending your whole time learning your committees. We serve on committees just like the state legislature. And so we have 8 standing committees, 15 county commissioners. I sit on government operations audit. I chair the public safety committee, and I chair a task force on technology. And so then we deal with all different outside organizations, SEMCOG, the Michigan Municipal League. We have liaisons in Lansing and Washington to see how MAC, the Michigan Association of Counties. So a lot of other government agencies that we work with. So you have to learn the and a lot of authorities. Boy, we have a port authority and an airport authority and a stadium authority and a building authority and a mental health authority. So you have to learn about who all the players are. We have 5 countywides. We have 7 departments under the executive. We run a jail. I mean, a prosecutor's office, a Third Circuit court. So it's a tremendous learning curve to learn everything that goes on. So you spend your first year or two learning everything that goes on.
You're not managing any of those. The county executive is, isn't he?
The county executive runs day-to-day operations, but we approve budget allocations for those operations, and we write policy that influences how those operations happen.
Oh, that's fun.
Checks and balances. So getting to the reforms, the next 2 years that I was, that now the next 2 years is really when you should be able to hit the ground running.
It would seem that way.
Absolutely. And so
is it like that?
It was for me.
Okay, good.
I thought you were setting me up for
when you could lose and not have a chance to do it.
Well, yeah. No, technically you're right. I mean, your original work, your body of work is being judged. Your first 2 years is being judged based on a learning curve and campaign. I mean, and so
yeah. Well, I think the most important thing that you need to do in the first 2 years, and you either have it in your heart to do it when you run or not. And I think that this is where people who go into government for the right reasons will come to the top and sustain. Is because, and I think this is what works for me, and it's just because it's the reason I'm here. But you have to be attentive to your people. You know, you have to be accessible. You said you see me at Berwyn. You see me at Eaton.
I see you all the time.
Yeah,
I do.
You see me everywhere. And you do because that's the only way I can hear from my people. And so, and to me, that's the most important thing. I'm a representative, you know, and I don't forget that. I remember me telling you that I was very disheartened when I went to Lansing and to Washington by the lack of representation.
Absolutely.
That's what drove me to run. So I'm here to represent. So, you know, I realize that I have these skill sets. I have an education. I have a professional business background. I know how to make decisions and problem solve and policy write and improve processes. But in order to do that, how I do that is determined by my people and what their needs and concerns are. Okay? So the obvious things that came to the surface in the second term was the FBI investigation. And the FBI investigation in Wayne County was, I think, a great opportunity to reinvent Wayne County. I mean, it's horrible. Was I appalled? As much as anyone. But I'm really glad to be able to be there at a time when these things came to the surface. So the problems were exposed. Now we have no excuse not to address them, and that's what I do in most of these reforms.
So basically when the FBI investigated, you looked at it as an opportunity, whereas other people, I remember reading about people running scared, which is really, really interesting. So you saw it as an opportunity to be able to fix things again.
Absolutely.
That's so funny.
Absolutely, yes. And so one of the things that actually we were already... Hence the new proposals. And you know, there were some things that I want to, in all fairness to the county commission, there were some of these things that were being pursued prior to the FBI investigation regarding the severance check. The ethics ordinance was a task force that came out of the audit committee. I sit on the audit committee. I had an instance where my office was
ramshackled.
Violated. Yes, someone went into my office and took things from my office. But because of that occurrence, I was a victim in that situation. And so our chairman came to me in audit, and he said, Diane, we need to create an ethics ordinance in Wayne County because, you know, nothing was came out of that. That was all kind of okay under the law, okay? So the prosecutors felt it was okay under the law, what happened there. But there's legal things and there's ethical things.
Right.
And they felt that there was a lot of breach of ethics that happened there. So this is what gave birth to the idea that Wayne County needs an ethics ordinance. And so they created a task force. They asked me to chair it. And it took us 2 years. And I worked very closely with Commissioner Joan Gephardt as well. She also came on in leadership of that task force at the end. And between the two of us and the chairman of the county commission, Gary Waronchuk, we were able to complete and pass the ethic ordinance prior to that was almost completed.
What's
when this whole thing came out.
What's the essence of the ethics ordinance?
Disclosure and transparency and accountability. It eliminates friends and family deals. It makes you disclose government contracting if you have any relatives that work for contracts. So you have to talk about any relationships that you have with county contractors or within the county. It also makes everything accessible to the people. As far as people wanted to pull up our ethics ordinance and see what we have to be held accountable to, it's accessible.
Transparency would have been a better word than ethics. I never thought about
ethics. Ethics incorporates a lot. Transparency is just one of the aspects.
Ethics, it deals with gift receiving and giving gifts.
Mm-hmm. Transparency is just the fact that people know about it, which is built in.
Right.
While you were going through this process, at any time did you go, man, this is a no-brainer. We should have done this a while ago.
Well, you know what? You know what's a no-brainer?
Do the ordinances come out of that discussion? The new ordinances, they're a byproduct of...
To some degree, but that kind of goes off in another direction. Let me answer Dennis's question first, and then I will certainly get to that. I lost my train of thought.
No-brainer.
Yeah, you know what's a no-brainer? Ethics are a no-brainer. You know, and so are these ordinances. Mm-hmm. Should you have to tell people do not steal, do not lie?
Right. I think I voted for all of them. I'm surprised the three of them failed.
Thank you so much for voting for all of them, and I wish they would have all passed.
I didn't think. I know I did.
But you're involved in government every day, and so you have better insight than just because of the virtue of your experience.
Why would somebody not vote for them?
What's because confusing? They're very... because I think that, for one thing, we had a 4-page ballot. I think people felt pretty inundated and overwhelmed. We had television stations going on night and day, right? This commercial telling you yes, this commercial telling you no. The county
without explaining what the thing was about.
Well, they...
That's what I looked at. I said, they're telling you to vote no or yes, but without saying what's the issue at hand.
Well, I think that they have a 30-second time spot, and they try to appeal to people emotionally. They try to push people's triggers. You know this in radio, media, marketing, advertising, all of that.
All of those things, yeah.
All of those things.
And here, if it bleeds, it leads. That's the saying, and that's not. It's no different. If an opponent, if there's something... A wound laying open there, it seems like the political people will jump all over it.
Oh, absolutely.
And then there's a misinformation, and I know I don't want to get into it too much, but I heard so many things, and there's so little governing what can be said during a political campaign, some of these proposals, and I know just from my own knowledge of covering them that they were downright lies.
Thank you. You know what? That's absolutely the truth, and...
So when you better go through them before we run out of time. Which one's won, which one's lost?
Okay.
And what was so? What's important about that?
Okay.
Well, I was just going to ask the two that you had authored, because I know one had passed, and that was regarding the budget.
Uh-huh.
Talk about a no. I mean, just that made sense to me on different levels. So if we want to talk about those.
Okay. There was five. I authored two. The two that I authored was Prop 1 under the county budget, which was allowing the county commission to determine the form of the budget. Historically, the executive has determined the form of the budget, which means he determines what to line item and what to lump sum. So this makes it very difficult for
or the... Or what things to combine to mix them all up.
Oh, yeah. So there's no clear depiction of financial allocations. And this is something I've been fighting with since day one I got there. Even if, with the learning curve, you know, I come from the private sector, so I want to see a balance sheet. I want
to
see...
How would you explain it to somebody else when you can't figure it out?
Well, you're not given the information,
No,
too.
That's what I mean about
exactly.
not being able to figure it out.
Well, exactly. They intentionally, I feel... you know, what? How powerful is that? Knowledge is power, right?
Absolutely.
So if you have the knowledge, then you have the ability to make the decisions to change the way things are done. So one of the parts of the learning curve that I learned in the first 2 years, it didn't take that. It took the first time I looked at the first budget, and I said, how in the world can this body oversee this document when you can't even get the detailed information of how $3 million to an economic development department is distributed? You know, how do you make the decisions when you're cutting in a time when every dime counts and you're eliminating critical programs that, you know, the CEO, the executive side, proposes the budget. They look at the projections, the tax revenues from the treasurer's office, and they give us a budget that says this is what all the departments ran on last year. This is what they were able to accomplish with those dollars. These are the programs, et cetera. And... you know, this is what we're proposing this year. We're taking a $60 million or, you know, it's about $100 million that we've lost in projected revenues and tax revenues in 4 years at the county. We've lost $100 million. Okay, that's a big hole to fill. So every year they're reducing programs and services, and but they're trying to reinvent themselves all the time and do things smarter and better. But they're also having to balance that with reductions. Okay, so how, as a county commissioner, can you make decisions when they're saying $3 million go to this department, and $8 million go to this department, and $30 million go to this department? They're not saying, well, in the Senior and Veteran Services Department, we're going to eliminate this program or this program. They're just saying we're going to take this budget down from, you know, $20 million, and I'm using these numbers hypothetically.
Right, just round numbers.
To $15
million. Right.
But they won't tell us what they're eliminating. Well, you know, so basically, as far as we being charged with oversight of a budget, I don't think we had the tools to do oversight of the budget. I think that, you know, people criticize the county commission for being a rubber stamp.
And you can't hire and fire.
And we can't hire and fire.
And that's where all the money is. It's in people's salaries, wages, pensions, and benefits.
And we're not a law enforcement agency, so we can't conduct investigation. So that's why the FBI is necessary. So a lot of the things that people didn't understand, how were these things allowed to happen when the county commission is supposed to be...
How about the Wayne County Sheriff? Doesn't that have investigative power in the county?
No, because he's part of the county. His budget's included. Same with the prosecutor and the court. So it has to be...
like a conflict.
Yes.
We have just a couple minutes here. We're Diane Webbs, Wayne County Commissioner. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views with Netta Piggy, and I'm Dennis Reimers. So that's the budget. That was the one you authored. Tell us a little bit about the other one that you authored. Unfortunately, it did not pass.
And it gets to what the comments that Mr. Napinion just made about the salaries and benefits of employees. I had authored a ballot that's a ballot charter amendment for the ballot that would have given the county commission power to approve all employee compensation, and it did not pass. I was very disheartened. Basically, this means that the executive can
hire and fire.
Not only hire and fire, that's an executive function, but he can pay him whatever he wants. Mm. And he doesn't even have to disclose it. So, I mean...
Hence you get
unrealistic salaries, you get benefit packages that don't make sense, you get sweetheart retirement deals.
Which is kind of counters what the one that did pass to a degree, didn't it?
Well, the one that did pass will help us anyway. It will help us control the budget, but we can't get into, you know, we can line item and say...
Right.
I'm pretty tired of getting a lump sum that says my 178 appointees make this much money. And that would include their salaries, their pensions, their benefits. So there's no way to break it down to see if it's comparable in the marketplace. These people have the qualifications to be doing the job. Are they working in the department where they do the job? I don't know.
Right.
And I can't tell, and I can't govern this. So that number one that passed, and thanks to the people out there that supported number one, I appreciate it so much, that will give us the power to control the dollars, okay? So we can't say, yeah, you can spend $100,000 on Joe Smith and $100,000 on Jane Doe. We can't do that, but we can say you get X amount of dollars for your staff. That's we get X amount of dollars for. So at least we can control that in the budget.
What? Tell us, really, we have about a minute. What's the other one that did pass has to do with the governor being able to remove the county executive?
The county executive was the only person that couldn't be removed by the governor previously. And the reason that is that the state statute that gives the governor the ability to remove all other countywide electeds, the sheriff, the prosecutor, et cetera, from office, was written at a time when we were in a chartered county. So we didn't have a CEO yet. We didn't have a county executive.
To remove.
So it was just omitted because it didn't exist at the time. So this will just send a message to Lansing, because obviously we can't amend their state constitution.
Right.
But it says the people of Wayne County want the governor to have the power to remove the CEO if there is reason to.
If there's reason.
Right.
Okay. And it's, like you said, it's no different than other, and they have to follow a procedure, I'm sure.
It's parity.
Okay.
Yeah, it brings parity.
Okay. Just in a nutshell, I know you're excited again. Congratulations. This is Diane Webb. Thank you for sharing time with us.
Do we have time to list the three that didn't pass just by title?
The three that didn't pass was the one regarding the employee compensation, the one that would have brought parity to the retirement board and allowing the airport people to have representation on their pension board, which is a shame that didn't pass, because that's all that was parity. I think it was confusion that it didn't pass. And the other one that would have allowed our current auditor, external auditor, to bid on continuing to do our audits, because right now every 8 years we have to change that person out, and there's no other competition but one other firm. So now we have no control of the cost.
What is something you're looking forward to? Something you want to tackle right away? Is there some things that you've been working on, maybe?
There's several things. In my technology task force, I want to work to bring technical compatibility throughout the county. Right now, it's the Tower of Babylon for people who are techno-savvy, and this is both of our backgrounds.
Sure.
Our systems can't talk to one another, from the sheriff's department to the prosecutor's office. People who work together every day are on different computer systems. I want to bring efficiencies through my task force and bring everybody on the same page. That'll save money, it'll save time, and it'll improve service delivery. That's just one to our residents, and that's just one of the things. I've got a long list.
This is Diane Webb, Wayne County Commissioner. Thank you so much for sharing time with us.
Thank you.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm very happy. I know I'll see you at the council meetings, and I know for a fact at all the various functions, because you're there. You're definitely a face in the crowd to meet these people and to get to know what you need to fix, right?
Right.
This is Dennis Reimers with Netta Piggy, and you've listened to, go ahead, Ned.
News and Views.
Durbin Heights News and Views. Thank you. We'll be back in a month, and I just had a great time. Thanks again, Diane.
Thanks so much.
Have a great day, and be nice to each other.
You have been listening to The Heights News and Views, presented on the second Tuesday of every month on WHFR Dearborn, making waves on 89.3 FM. This program is devoted entirely to issues of interest to the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, Michigan, presented from 1 until 2 p.m. on the second Tuesday of every month, making waves in Dearborn, Michigan, from the campus of the Henry Ford Community College radio station on 89.3 FM. You can listen to these programs on the internet at whfr.fm, or you can re-listen to this or any one of our other archived programs by selecting whfr.fm. Then from our homepage, select the Talk Show button and choose the date of the program that you wish to re-listen to. We hope that you decide to listen to us again on the second Tuesday of next month. On behalf of our co-hosts, WHFR's News Director Dennis Reimers and Dearborn Heights Councilman Ned Apigian, good afternoon.